Welcome to Purdue Crop Chat, a regular podcast from Hoosier Ag Today and the Purdue University Extension Service, featuring Purdue Extension soybean specialist Dr. Sean Castile and Extension corn specialist Dr. Dan Quinn. On this episode, Sean and Dan get ready for planting season, but some have already started.
A lot of people hear the message of, I'm planning to plant them earlier, so earlier the better. So we definitely have some of those fields that are in the ground. Whether they should be or not, it's another story.
This podcast is made possible by the Indiana Corn Marketing Council and Indiana Soybean Alliance. Your Indiana corn and soybean checkoff investments yesterday are paying off today. New research, new uses, demand creation, bringing dollars back to the farm. Check it out at yourcheckoff.org. Now your host for Purdue Crop Chat, Hoosier Ag Today's Eric Pfeiffer.
Welcome back to the Indiana Corn and Soybean Innovation Center for this edition of the Purdue Crop Chat. Thanks for joining us. As always, I'm here with the stars of the show, Dan Corn Quinn, Purdue Extension Corn Specialist. Hello, Dan.
Hey, Eric.
And soybean, Sean Castile. How are we doing, Sean?
I'm doing well, Eric. Yourself?
Doing all right. It's I've been on vacation since we last spoke. I'm refreshed, ready to go.
Awesome.
I went out to DC, so you know I'm ready for all of your levels of no, I won't say it. I'm all good to go here. So it's man, planting season. It's here. And I know when we were talking the last time we saw each other was down in Houston. And Sean, I know even then you heard about some folks that were putting some soybeans in the ground at that point because we did have some nice weather. I can only imagine that we've had a little bit more go in since then because we have seen some nice weather.
No, the weather has been tremendous. The idea that February was 65, 70 degree weather. I mean, just gorgeous sunshine. We even had some strong winds to even dry out the soil even more. So planting, I know that there's been a handful of people scratching around, getting those in the ground. You know, the lesson that we've learned on soybeans over the years has been plant them timely, get a good yield response. And a lot of people hear the message of, I'm planning on plant them earlier. So earlier the better. So we definitely have some of those fields that are in the ground. Whether they should be or not, it's another story. But
that was my next question, because we have had a couple of freezes here and there. I mean, just last night, as we sit here and talk on Thursday, it was a little frosty up here in West Lafayette.
Yeah, no doubt. I think the temperatures are obviously the main storyline within these plantings, but you also have to put it in context of when the beans were planted. Same thing if there happens to be any corn in the ground. And in particular, this cold temperatures that we've gotten, if the beans were in the ground, they've already imbibed water that's been a little bit warmer, and then they caught this cooler spell of night temperatures, they're probably okay. Those that just got planted right before that cold spell and got cold water taking it up, that could be problematic on what's out there. Again, there's not much, but the few beans that are out there.
And corn's not out there yet, right? Like, no. Have people gone there yet?
No, they haven't gotten that crazy yet.
Okay.
Yeah, it's more good. I'm glad to hear that.
The soybean guys, right? You need to, get the neighbors riled up. You got to, put your social media posts out there with your early beans. So.
Yeah. I will say field activity has been really good. So we talked about planting, but let's take a step back. Saw a lot of fertilizer applicators going. So those that didn't get anything done in the fall, or if they happen to be a spring application. So a lot of that work has already been done. So it's great to get that out there, especially I've had comments over the years about putting out double aught 60 potash ahead of soybeans. If they do it at planting, have some concerns with that chloride. So if they've already gotten it out, they've got weather, they've got time, rain to kind of work that chloride through. So that looks like a really good situation. And I've seen some tillage passes already done. And I tell you what, Dan, some of these passes have been the best. I mean, the field conditions have been the best I've seen in a long time for field operations and tillage in the spring.
It was almost kind of scary how good the ground worked up. Even here at the research farm, we had some of our fields worked pretty recently, and it was kind of scary how good the ground conditions were. But yeah, I saw a little bit of anhydrous been around the state over the last couple of weeks. Some anhydrous going on, a lot of dragline manure in places going on, fertilizer, broadcast fertilizer going on. So field activities are getting out there. I think some of the drier conditions. We had a meeting this morning, I think, for you know, where we're at, we're still at a little bit of a deficit in total yearly rainfall that we've had, maybe deficit of 6-7 inches is what I heard this morning. So we've been on the dry side. So hopefully that does not continue. You don't want to enter the year being in a deficit, but it has helped get some of these field activities done.
Well, if it does get a little dry, we can always just have Sean turn on his ABBA playlist for Dan over here, and we can get the rain dance going.
Dancing Queen Dan to come back. Sounds
and,
good.
And so now at this point, I think, you know, folks are getting antsy. They're getting amped up, ready to go. I was at an event last night, the Indiana Soybean Alliance. They do this event each year. 30 years now they've been doing this, the student soybean competition. Incredible event, a lot of soybean farmers in the room last night, and I was checking in, Sean. I was like, eh, what do you think? You getting out there here soon? Like, yeah, well, you know, my agronomist says maybe wait a little bit longer, but you know, maybe next week, maybe. We can... So we've got some folks really thinking about this here, but one farmer up north in particular said, you know what, it's been great getting out there to work some ground. But he had something caught in his equipment, and he got down on the ground. He says, my knees were cold on that ground. Like, it is just too cold at this point. Maybe a reminder about soil temps and where we should be.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, we use the 50-degree mark for both crops, I think, for the most part, to say, hey, a 2-inch line, are we averaging 50 degrees, and do we have a trajectory of it increasing? So that forecast that comes into play, I think that's a big part of that. I alluded to earlier about the temperature of the water. That's about the water that's going into the plant, and so that into the seed, that is. And so that really comes down to the soil temperature that's affecting that water. And so if we're below that point, that becomes an issue with some of the membranes of the plant, the seed that's developing. In particular, we get this inhibition of chilling if it gets way cooler, you know, 30-degree kind of weather and soil temps and moisture.
Same thing, Dan, right?
Yeah, same thing. It's, you know, we always use this mark of 50 degrees, and that's, you know, hey, we can go at 50 degrees, but, you know, that's often the bare minimum, right? It's, you know, if you're hovering around 50 degrees soil temperature, it may dip below it, it may go above it. We like to see 50 degrees and increasing, especially on the corn side. You know, we reiterate this point every single year this time of year for corn. I'd rather have, you know, even at 50 degree soil temp, and if it stays at 50 degrees, it might take 20, 30 days for that seed to get out of the ground. Mm-hmm. Where if you waited, say, a week or two and you caught 60, 65 degree soil temps, yep, it may take, you know, 7 to 10 days. I would much rather have you have the 7 to 10 days. The big thing with corn is just getting it out of the ground. Getting it out of the ground uniformly and timely is really, really important. So, you know, one way I would say the sentiment for the soybean mindset has kind of shifted, where a lot of the farmers are like, I'm going to put my beans in early. I got to put them in. I pick up a little bit. It's not every farmer, but I do pick up a little bit on the corn side now, where they're like, you know, it's okay if I wait. Or I've had the comments, I planted late May and it was the best corn I ever had, you know, or they're starting to understand, you know, my priority is beans first. Yeah, we'll get the corn in when, you know, the soil temperatures are warmer. It can get out of the ground a lot better. You know, it's not as big a deal if I shoot for, you know, late April, early May. It's still important, right, to catch that potential and to get it planted in a timely fashion. But you see a little bit of that mindset shift a little bit on the corn side.
But Mother Nature has to cooperate too. I mean, we gotta get all that stuff figured out. Let's talk a little bit here. We just got a big report here from USDA today, prospective plantings, and I think Sean, you get to again gloat. it's time to start the annual campaign. I have, you know, Indiana Beach up here in Monticello, their famous line, there's more than corn in Indiana. I don't know. There needs
there's a lot more soybeans.
There's
than
a
there
lot more soybeans in the so you know, we probably need to get this updated. I think this annual campaign needs to begin now. But there's more than soybeans. It doesn't have the same ring to it.
It doesn't have the same ring to it, but soybeans are certainly going to be on top of the hill this year. I think, 5.8 million acres in Indiana, and then what, corn's 5.1, something 5.1 like that?
5.1 in there, yep. Mm-hmm.
What's going on? What's going on, Dan?
it usually comes back to the price, right? You look at where the grain price is at. I mean, no, beans are down too, but corn's back down, hovering around that $4, $4.50 in there. I saw it, you know, the report comes out, it did bump up today when that came out, but it's what often drives that acre discrepancy is often the price. We saw it, a couple of years ago, yep, where the nitrogen fertilizer prices, yep, went haywire. That really drove it, but I think it's, you know, a lot of it is that grain price and where it's at.
Well, and I think it's a grain price also with the inputs that, yes, you put into, yep, that corn crop, right? I don't have the numbers memorized between the two crops, but certainly the amount of investment that goes into inputs on corn is outweighing the inputs that go into soy.
Yeah, you look at, I was actually talking to a farmer we work with just north of here recently, and they were talking about, you know, nitrogen prices are down, but they're really not down to where they were, say, 3-4 years ago at that point. And there was actually, I think, some of the out of University of Illinois, they you know, track those retail fertilizer prices, and they kind of hovered but actually creeped up a little bit in terms of price. So it really comes back to the inputs. We always talk about this. Farmers will always tell you, right, the crop price will go way down.
Yep.
Takes a lot longer for those input prices to go
down.
To
come down,
as well.
or just stabilize, right? Yeah, exactly. I mean, maybe they're not increasing as fast anymore, but the, yep, decrease, you don't, exactly, see that as much.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think, you know, hearing Dr. Jim Minter, Dr. Michael Langemeyer talk about this, it's kind of this interesting dichotomy, if you will, that we're looking at these record high prices that we saw recently in fertilizer, mm-hmm, but you also have to keep in mind those were coming off of record low prices, sure, historically. Mm-hmm. So there is this big imbalance. Like, if folks are waiting for it to get back where it was, I don't know that that's going to happen, just because maybe we're getting closer to what, yeah, I hate to use this word, normal anymore, because who knows what it is?
Yeah, who knows what that is? And then you also have to put in the fact of, okay, how have our yields been? We've had tremendous yields for a number of years. So what number are you using in your calculation? Say, okay, am I going to use, what was the state average again for corn last year?
203.
203 as an average, mm-hmm, right? And so does a farmer use a 250, a 275 as their target? Or do they do a 200, right? That makes a, yeah, huge difference in which crop you're going with.
Yeah, say a lot of farmers, depending on where you're at, but a lot of them are in that 250 target, yeah, 250 and above is their target, yeah.
Sure.
As we do look toward planting season again, some have really gotten going here, but some still holding off on the urge. What types of things are you thinking about right now, Sean, as folks need to get ready? I know equipment is a big one, mm-hmm, this time of year. What else is going on?
Yeah, I mean, the warmer weather has also livened up those that have the cereal rye, those that have the cover crops, those that have wheat too, right? So to be mindful of, okay, those crops are growing. What is your target with that crop? Let's go with the cover crop. Are you looking to get a lot of biomass? Or are you looking to get shin high kind of biomass? That might come a little bit earlier than it did last year. Like last year, we were mid-April with that kind of a target. If that's where you're at, it may be next week for that matter, right? Depending on what kind of seeding rates that you put out with the cereal rye. So I think be mindful of that. Secondly, with weather and planting date, I can't help but think about the herbicide programs to make sure that you've got those lined up with what you have in terms of, you still running dicamba with this year, if you're running 2,4-D program, but also the pre's in terms of their activity in the soil temps, and then how does that line up when you anticipate to plant the soybean? So, I mean, that soybean's trying to metabolize that herbicide. And so, you know, try to set up a stage where you got weed-free as much as possible, residuals, but also not damage your soybean crop.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Dan? What are you thinking about right now?
You know, I keep coming back to the planters, right? You know, Sean mentioned a lot of the important aspects that we're thinking about. Same thing on the corn side, but you know, the planters. You know, let's see. A lot of farmers have either they're hooked up, they're backed out of the shed. You know, especially on the corn side, right? There's so much technology. There's so many components on these planters today, and you know, a lot of that helps and it's beneficial, but if it's not set right, you can have issues. And also, a lot of these planters are not like our research planters that are, say, 4 or 6 rows, where it's a lot easier for me to check these rows. Mm-hmm. They're 24 rows. Mm-hmm. And you know, you think about different rows wear differently, different parts wear differently, especially on the corn side, right? what comes back to, you know, we talk about the timeliness of the emergence and the consistency of that crop coming up. That's that consistency of that placement of that seed, right? The depth consistency, right? The furrow, you know, you think about any issues that we have with that seed in terms of compaction with the furrow. So it starts, you know, with the row cleaners. It starts with, you know, if you have down pressure on that, what the down pressure is set at. You think about the closing wheels, the starter system. So there's so many different components on that planter. So doing everything you can to make sure things are maintained well, parts are replaced where it needs to be, things are set well. There's a lot of, you know, good tools to check every row and make sure the depth is consistent, right, across that entire planter. So doing everything you can, and you know, majority of the farmers do this, they do a great job at this, but you know, checking everything on that planter and making sure one, everything works. I'm going to do that in our research side, but also making sure everything is set so we're catching a lot of that consistency across that entire planter.
Something else that's coming to my mind, Dan, is, you know, as our seed gets delivered, I haven't seen any of ours yet, but I mean, it's coming, you know, we need to be looking at our seed tags, right? We need to be looking at the germination scores. And if they don't have cool germ scores on there to make the contact with your seed dealers in particular, again, if we're going to say soybeans are going to be the one that gets pulled first, see if you can get some vigor scores or some cool germination scores. So then it's like, okay, of the three or four varieties I have, this lot is the one that has better vigor or has better cold germ scores. You better be thinking about those are the ones to put out first so it can, again, we're going to have an April that's going to come back. We're going to get the sweeping cold pressure. When is it not going to happen, right? So let's get a seed out there that can at least handle that. So that's the other thing that comes to my mind.
Seems to me he's dabbling a little bit in meteorology over here.
You got the witch's broom and everything else.
Let's take a time out here, and when we come back, I'm going to take this a little bit of a different direction here and throw you guys for a loop. It's what I like to do, just to see if you've got answers. So when we come back, I want to talk about ROI and are there any shortcuts that we can take? Farmers are looking for ROI everywhere, and they're looking for you guys to give them shortcuts. So we're going to talk about that when we come back here on the Purdue Crop Chat.
Biodiesel is bringing value back to the farm, accelerating the demand for Indiana soybeans, increasing market value, and reducing greenhouse gases. The Indiana Soybean Alliance puts checkoff dollars to work, researching and promoting biodiesel in Indiana, growing production, creating nearly 3,200 jobs across Indiana, and increasing soybean ROI $36 per acre. The future of fuel is biodiesel. Learn more about biofuels at yourcheckoff.org.
And we're back here at the Indiana Corn and Soybean Innovation Center, the Purdue Crop Chat. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today, Dan Cornquinn over there, soybean Sean Castile over here. And, you know, that thing I did before we took the time out, that's called a tease. That's what we call it here in the radio biz. So let me follow through on the tease.
I don't know, Roy, if that's your question. I don't know who Roy is.
Farmers are. They're looking at everything here, Sean. I mean, we already talked about what markets are doing. It hasn't been a pretty picture. Sure. I think, gosh, we were looking at some numbers from a year ago, looking at those front month contracts right now. Like $2 off in soybeans, over $2 off. Similar picture in corn. I mean, it's just it's a tough environment right now. So they're looking at what products am I using? What types of things can I figure out here? What advice can you offer? Sean, I'll start with you. Is there a shortcut these guys can take?
Next question.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and the minute you give a shortcut and then things don't work out, they're coming after you.
That's fine. You set me up for that. That's all right. I'll be the scapegoat.
But there's got to be some things right now that they can be looking at that, you know, even if it's not something for right now, maybe something in season that, you know, let's think about this before we go and just buy it all.
You know, I'm going to take it even a step beyond that. Before in season, I think if life is opening up with field conditions that you think are going to be fit, to go talk to your elevator, go talk to your contractor, to say, okay, here's what I'm looking at. I'm looking to get planting soon and catch an old market price. Maybe it's not as good, but it's higher usually. You know, you think about an early harvest, catch an old market price versus a fall price. that might be an option for a lot of guys and say, okay, if I'm going to do that, what's the best scenario to plant now or timely or soon with a shorter season so then you can harvest it and get that premium that comes with an earlier delivery on old market price. So that, and not everyone's going to have that ability, but boy, I think that things are set up that you could, and again, have those contacts and those you know contracts, if you will, or at least conversations with who the buyer would be. Hey, would you pay for an earlier delivery? Is it a dollar premium? Whatever the premium is, I think there could be money had there just on when am I pulling the trigger? What maturity group am I going to plant to try to catch that? That's first, right? You put a ROI out there, return on investment.
Yep.
All right, so that comes to my mind. We talk a lot about just agronomic soundness and best management practices to get the high yield management in return. And we make the assumption, we follow through on some economics, but a lot of it's like, okay, I plant timely. We have conditions that need to seed treatment, so that's going to give me the best yield and best profit. And so by and large, that holds true fully. Now you've asked the question of, okay, return on investment. I think we hit an easy one on seed rates. We can start to shave some of that off with these conditions. Seed treatments are going to be a great place that, hey, you've already made the decision for a seed treatment, and it's going to protect it, and you're going to have a better stand establishment. I think you can cut some seed rates there, get some savings of $10, $15 an acre pretty quick, depending on how high a lot of these guys are going. I still run across farmers with a 15-inch planter that's running 175,000 seeds, right? You can save $15, $20 easy by just dropping to 140. And that gets you in the ballpark of better return on investment. The other things that come to my mind with the growing season itself is it's the same song and dance we talk about with just scouting your crop, knowing what's going on, and have it set up for, do I have fields that are traditionally have white mold, right? And we could be in a situation we're planting earlier, we have flowers that are coming on earlier in the season. All this kind of has this cascading effect. And so if we have plants that are flowering earlier, typically cooler, wetter conditions, moist condition, that would be a prime white mold kind of category. So let's be prepared for those. So those are the things that come to my mind, at least immediately.
Dan, on corn, your turn.
Well, I think, you know, especially when you think about this year at this point in time, and, you know, a lot of times it is fairly difficult at this point in time because, you know, we often think about, you know, a lot of the farmers have prepaid most of their stuff. They have their seed right now. But, you know, just starting from the top, right, you can, even on the seeding rate side in corn, you know, not, I would say, as drastic as soybeans.
Sure.
But a lot of the, you know, the seeding rate work that Bob had done in the past and some of the work that we have done, you know, even from, say, 28,000 all the way up to 38,000, right, there's a lot of instances we only see, like, a difference of a bushel. You know, that's not all cases in all environments, but it's often, you could maybe shave off, you know, 10% of that seeding rate, 10-15% in certain areas. You think about, you know, in the future, right, with the soil tests, we've talked a lot about that when fertilizer prices got as high as they did, you know, making sure your fields are sampled. There might be fields that your P and K are adequate, right? That's where those recommendations have built in that, you know, if we have a year or if stuff gets expensive on us, you know, hey, maybe we don't need to put the P and K on this year because our levels are adequate. And it's just, you know, back to the sound agronomic practices, you know, obviously we know the important aspects of planting timely and having good seed and the seed treatments and you know, managing your nitrogen efficiently. But you think about, there's a lot of extras out there, right? We see a lot of the extras when we're down in Commodity Classic as well. So be very mindful about all those extras, right? And I would say when corn is $7 or $6-$7, we see a lot of those extras applied. And when it goes down to $4, it's probably a good idea to maybe start looking at some of those extras, right? Did you leave a check strip, right? Or can you really pinpoint that, you know, in-furrow product or that foliar product or this product that promised X, Y, and Z, did it really provide you any benefit? So, you know, really taking a close look at some of those. That's why we always reiterate the point that you almost have to always have some field that you do some form of research or you put a check strip out there just to check and have those checks out there to understand, you know, there's so much marketed out there. There's so many decisions that farmers have to make. And there's just so many products out there. It's unbelievable. So, you know, do I really need that extra product this year? Could we get away with that? And then, you know, you get into the scouting aspect too. That's always an important part. It's difficult, right? Because as I reiterate, a lot of the farmers maybe have prepaid their fungicide, right? They're already planning for that fungicide. But there may be instances where maybe they can roll over that to the next year if they don't use it. But scouting, right? If we have a really dry year, you might be able to get away without any fungicide or some of the insecticides. Do you really need to have that insecticide in there? Have you had insect issues in a long time? Talking to our entomologist, you know, John Obermeyer, corn rootworm populations in Indiana are at, you know, record lows. We just haven't had the issues that, say, Illinois and Iowa have, even with the resistance, but they're, knock on wood, yes, yeah, very yeah. loudly. So
we're going to come back to this. We have you videotaped on this.
Yep, here we go.
Who brought yep. the rootworm back to Indiana? Dan Quinn.
Jinxed yeah. it right there. But they tell me time and time again, they're at record lows. We just don't see the issues in the state. So you can start looking at some of that. You think about some of the traits in the seed packages and stuff like that. So there's a lot of things that you can look at in terms of extras and just doing your best in terms of best management practices and scouting and understand, do I really need to apply that product? Are the conditions conducive for that response of that product during that year in this field? And maybe you can cut in some of those areas.
I'm glad you brought up products in particular and mm-hmm. the idea of that. All right, if there's a new product or it's been around for the last couple of years, mm-hmm. like you said, have you actually tested it on your fields? Mm-hmm. If you haven't, okay. Do you have access to data, again, data that says it does have responsiveness and what kind of fields have been responsive? So whether it's, you know, Purdue trials with Dan and I or someone else, you go to Michigan State and they've got on-farm trials. So, I mean, to have a resource, say, what's the probability of success of this product mm-hmm. or practice? And so then you've got some grounds to say yes and grounds to say no. I know so much that went through the winner's circuit in terms of, here's a product stacked up. I'm like, man, there's a lot of that going around this winter, and I haven't seen any data on it. Mm-hmm. And it's $25 an acre compared to $4 an acre, you know, standard, right? So I think you've got to have those comparisons. And if you want to look at it on your farm, great. Don't look at it at the whole field and every mm-hmm. field. You need to have strips out there.
Yeah, I often get that comment, and it's like, I did this X product and I saw 10 bushel, and it's like, well, did you do strips or check? Well, I put it over my entire farm. It's like, well, how do you know the?
Because I was bushel? 10 bushels higher than the guy across the road, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, was it because your fields were better? The weather was better, right? There's a lot of confounding factors for that number.
I think this gets to the fear of missing out, right? Mm-hmm. The idea, and I think we all have some level, and there's different levels of this, mm-hmm. but it's like, all right, if I don't do it on everything, I've missed this opportunity, this upside. Mm-hmm. But boy, you got to have to the other side. It's fear of losing money. And it's like, I've wasted money, or fear of wasting money, right? You know, come up with a new acronym. But I think we have to have that balance of, okay, yeah, you have an upside, but you also have a wasted input in this as well.
See, you go and you use FOMO is what they call that, fear of missing.
I was going to go there, but I decided not to.
That's what the kids call it nowadays, FOMO. yeah. FOM doesn't work. Fear of losing money.
I was trying to work it on the fly. I couldn't, you know, fear of wasting money.
He was trying to figure it out on the fly.
I'm like, I don't have one right now. But I think that's the other part of it, right? It's fear of messing out, right? Exactly. But it's also, you got to have the fear of, okay, I'm going to lose some money on this.
And there's a little bit of a fear that, you know, I paid or had this product and it's new, and there's a little bit of fear that it maybe won't work as well. Yep. So we, you know, you see a little bit of that. So you I'm going to put it over every acre
Not proven wrong then that exactly, it was a wasted effort. Yeah.
You're listening to Purdue Crop Chat, brought to you by your Indiana Corn and Soybean Checkoff organizations. Visit yourcheckoff.org.
I think, you know, one thing that folks are realizing and maybe reevaluating are some of these relationships that they've had, whether they be with products, whether they be with, you know, the people that sell those mm-hmm. products. I think that, you know, not that the people are bad, I think there's just a lot of reevaluating going on right now of what is best. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of that is happening right now. On the other side of this, Sean, what can't you skip out on? Like, what must you do? Number one priority. Don't even think about
plant
skipping
soybeans
here.
Before corn. Done.
I'm not letting that fly. Come on. What else? What else?
But, no, I've been all serious. Timely planting of soybean is huge. Yeah. It is huge, absolutely. And there's a fun, I think the last episode we even had the Ohio State folks over, battle for the belt. And there's going to be situations where, I mean, corn might win out a little bit. But I'd say the lion's share is still soybeans have to be planted timely. And so within that management, you have to think about, okay, what is different about this system if you're new to that? If you haven't done that for a few years, and it's like, okay, these soils are cooler. And you're planting earlier than you're used to. So you better have a good seed treatment, right? I mean, again, hopefully these decisions have already been made. If not, you haven't put the seed in the ground. Maybe you have some access to an applicator to put a good seed treatment on there. Fungicide in particular is what I think of. I don't see much need for the insecticide side of it for us on the soybean front within the Indiana corridor here. So you've got that timely planting. Obviously, weed control. If you got weeds, that's going to be an issue. They're going to continue to just draw down on everything from the aspect of sunlight, water, nutrients, all of those. But be mindful, again, of how you apply that herbicide. And then, okay, the soybeans have to withstand that and have to withstand it in the way that they uptake it and metabolize it. So those are definite ones. Again, variety selection's already been there, but you want to select a variety and put it in fields that you know, hey, I'm in East Central Indiana. I know I've got Phytophthora. You better have the resistance package out there from the variety itself. Plus, okay, let's get a little seed treatment out there. I think you've got to put all that together. One other thing, I'm going to switch back as I think about this. You know, if we're saying tap the brakes on planting, boy, this weather's been beautiful for taking soil samples for nematodes. If you haven't done that, go do that now, right? Go do it, and you can get that information and have that accessible. So, I mean, those are definitely some of the things that come to my mind. You know, it's no secret I've played around with the sulfur thing for a number of years. If you're planting earlier, I think you've got to have some strips to say, do I have a responsive site or not? Because a lot of these soils that are responsive is because it's been cooler soils, limited mineralization. So the microbes aren't as active. They're not supplying the sulfur that's needed for the nodulation. So that might be a nice play.
Dan, what can't we skip out on? What do we have to have?
Planted well, after soybean.
No skimping here.
You gotta have seed one.
Okay,
I let that one go. I thought about doing that too.
Well, it depends.
No, I think you know it starts. And a lot of these decisions are already made. They already have the seed in the back of the shed ready to go, right? But good genetics is just it's unbelievable. Every single year where we even come back to, I think we go through the song and dance every year. We lost yield in these conditions, and it's like crap, where did this yield come from? So it just is a testament to just if you have good genetics, how much that can carry you through a lot of the variable conditions that we run into, whether it be too wet or too dry. On the corn side, right, planting, I always lean towards having it after beans, right, because you can get...
'Cause beans rule.
You can take that and clip that out of the podcast.
Beans just need more time. Yep, you know, yep.
But getting that corn, we bring this up, and this is something I've heard time and time again. You know, something goes wrong at planting, it's going to just irk you the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. So if it, you know, it's hard for a lot of farmers to hear this and other people to hear this, I know, because it's difficult to be patient in the spring. And mm-hmm. I'm that way as a researcher. We both, Sean and I, plan a lot of our trials. We're impatient when it comes to getting stuff out there. But, you know, maybe if you waited a week or so and got into really good conditions for that corn crop and got it out of the ground, that's really important. And, you know, got to have nitrogen fertilizer for that corn, right? I've seen plenty of corn plots without nitrogen fertilizer, and I can tell you it's not good. So being really, you know, efficient with your nitrogen, being smart with your nitrogen is really, really important, whether it be, you know, anhydrous applications or starter applications and side dress applications. You know, being more efficient with your nitrogen fertilizer is really, really important. Weed control is imperative every single year, every field, right? If one thing I've learned from the weed scientists, you got to have that pre-emergent with with the residual there. You just have to have it. So that's really, really important is maintaining your weed control.
Dan, I'm going to interrupt. So in terms of, I'm going to go back one step, nutrients, starters, right? So let's say for some reason someone wants to plant corn before the soybeans in these cooler conditions. Is there a must within that starter for you on the corn front?
Actually, a lot of the work that, you know, Bob and Jim had done, and then, you know, a lot of work that I've done even up in Michigan and summarizing a lot of the starter work that we've done is that when you kind of think about it, right, when the soil is a little bit cooler, you know, you maybe think, you know, hey, maybe I need, there's more instances where we need the starter or something like phosphorus, you know, wherever that zinc, root or, but it's often the case. What's been pretty interesting when we start looking at, you know, large data sets of the starter work is it really doesn't matter. You know, we often see fairly consistent in how the starter performs across a lot of different conditions, where we see that, you know, it performs in we can see responses in cool, you know, moist conditions.
You're talking starter nitrogen, or are you talking what?
Starter nitrogen and phosphorus. As well. We can see them perform in, say, cool or wet conditions, but we can also see them perform in dry conditions.
So it's not a, I need to make sure I add 1034-0 instead of just 28 in the starter,
yeah.
Right?
So I think, like, the original kind of thinking behind it was, well, a lot of the starter originally really started in more northern states, right?
Sure.
And in Minnesota and Michigan and up there. And we've kind of, when we summarize a lot of this data, it's been like, well, you know, we do see responses there, but you also see responses where it's still kind of dry or warm. So there wasn't really kind of one, at least from the work that I've done, kind of summarizing all the starter work that has been done. There wasn't really one condition. We tried to pull every weather data, latitudes, everything.
Yep.
Wasn't one that kind of pulled out.
That's
for
why
us.
I bring it up, because, I mean, there is this thought process, right? That, I mean, I've made it already clear on the sulfur side, hey, you're planting earlier, soils are cool. So maybe think about it. I'm not saying you need it or every field needs it, but here, what are the conditions that are affecting availability? And so my mind immediately goes on the corn front. You said starter. Well, hey, here's a great delivery mechanism. Not everything has it on soybeans. Well, let's bring 1034-0. Let's bring ATS in this earlier planting. So that's why I asked the question.
Yeah, I'm just a big proponent of starter on corn. I think it especially nitrogen, especially just having that in close proximity to the plant. So if you run into different types of conditions, right, those roots can tap into that band of fertilizer. We see it, you know, we talk about corn kind of transitions its root systems from relying on the seed to now relying on its nodal roots and its, you know, more primary root system during the season, where if you have something there, it kind of helps that crop get through that, right? And you think about sulfur, right?
Yep.
Sulfur is another instance where if soil is a little bit cooler and a little more wet and that corn goes through that transition period, then we often see sulfur deficiency.
Yep.
So it's kind of like a, you know, it just kind of carries that crop a little bit through there.
Maybe I hate to use it because it gets abused, but this insurance, assurance kind of thing that gets used a lot with, we talked about what products to actually use or not. But I mean, you come into a system like the starters, right? And that maybe you don't gain a yield advantage in the corn, but it helps in terms of just transitioning weather in the storms, whether it's dry or not. But then one consistent thing that I've seems like I've heard on the starters and corn, maybe not always yield, but what do you catch on the tail end a lot of times? A little more advanced, and so what, grain moisture, dry down?
Yeah, so it's often a growth stage ahead. It often flowers earlier, and then the grain moisture, that is the most consistent.
Yes.
And a lot of our work that has been done has actually found that just that grain moisture savings and the drier savings actually can pay for a lot of the starter systems.
Yeah, so you return on investment, right?
So
you don't have as much gas at the end of the season.
And on the corn side, too, you think about nitrogen in the starter. You know, a lot of these planters have starter systems on there. You know, a lot of them, farmers have that capability. We're not adding more nitrogen. We're just, you know, changing how we apply it, right? We're going through the field anyway. We're going to put a little bit of nutrient out there. It may slow you down a little bit if you're slowing up with the tanks.
But it hastens if it makes you quicker at the end, right, in terms of when you can finally get in the field, when you have longer days and everything else.
Yep. Exactly.
Guys, a lot to consider here, and we are going to start getting together a little bit more often here as things ramp up here in the growing season. You can expect a Purdue Crop Chat to come your way a bit more often here. Turn it on in the cab. We're we're going to be here for you. We're going to drag these guys in and make sure that they're passing along all this good information that you're going to need throughout the season. Guys, thanks for getting together here today. And let's hope all these folks out here, we get a safe season started and underway.
Yes, good luck to everyone.
Yes.
This has been Purdue Crop Chat, a regular series featuring Purdue Extension's Dr. Dan Quinn and Dr. Sean Castile, made possible by the Indiana Corn and Soybean Checkoffs, the Indiana Corn Marketing Council, and the Indiana Soybean Alliance. The Checkoffs are pleased to help bring you agronomy insights from Purdue Extension. Opinions on the podcast are those of the host and guests and not those of the sponsor. Purdue Crop Chat is a service of Purdue University Extension. And Hoosier Ag today, timely, relevant, credible.